my guest is Vittorio Bertocci. Vittorio, how are you, sir?
Hey, how's it going?
Did I say your name right?
You sounded perfect, right. Like a native.
Like a native of Detroit.
Well, I heard that in Detroit there are many Italians as well.
That's a fact, yes. All right, now, what do you do?
I am a program manager on the Windows Azure Active Directory team,
okay.
And I look after the developer experience for our products.
Interesting. I don't really know you from Azure or from Active Directory. I know you more from the, I guess it's sort of Active Directory, the identity, the WIF things that you've spoken about and read about.
Yep.
I have a dog-eared copy of your book because I went through it two or three times.
Great.
Trying to solve a project I was working on last year.
On behalf of my retirement club fund, thank you.
Okay. Let's talk about identity, there's a lot of terms I want to define first. Federated identity. What is that?
All right. Federated identity. Now, this is an interesting, you already started touching on an interesting point. Like, traditionally, federated identity mostly refers to a situation in which you have one group, like one entity, one organization, let's say, with which contains resources of some kind, and then you have another organization with users, and you want to give access to the users from the other organization to the resources in the first organization. And so you do what we call a federation, like you put those two guys together, and you somehow pool your resources. Now, the interesting thing is that traditionally, in order to solve that specific problem, you'd have to raise the level of abstraction of how you make that interaction happen. Because typically, organization one will have some specific, technological choices, specific protocols they want to use, and they will have their own domain controller that knows everything of what happens within the boundaries, but nothing but outside, and the same will be true for organization two. So in order to make federation happen, you'd have to establish some higher level protocol so that they can talk and understand each other without really knowing about the details of what's going on in one and what's going on, goes on in two. Now, given this historical perspective, today when people refer to federated identity, they often refer to the protocol that helps you to make this happen,
okay,
as opposed to the scenario. That's to say that you might be, be just organization one, taking your own application, and for example, deploying it in the cloud, and so at that point, this application lives outside of the boundaries of your organization.
Right.
So at that point, using federated protocols makes sense, because they allow you to cross that boundary.
Right.
But it is not technically a federation, because there's only one organization rather than two.
Okay.
So, and the term federation is often used in this enlarged, extended meaning, which just means I'm using those higher level protocols like AWS Federation, SAML, OpenID, for putting together these kind of communications.
Okay, well, let's talk about that protocol a little bit. In general terms, it's essentially, you have somebody that's not, their credentials don't exist within your own organization, and somehow or other, you have to figure out whether or not you can trust that person. For example, an individual visiting my website. I've never heard of this individual before. How do I know that I trust them to update secure information?
Yeah, that's a very good way of characterizing the problem. Well, behind the idea of, let's call it claims-based identity rather than federation, since it's more specific.
Okay, yeah, let's get it. That's what WIF, for example.
Right.
WIF is a lot of terms here that I've defined.
WIF is one of the tools that help you to add those capabilities in your applications so that you can play this game.
All right, but claims-based identity is what?
Right. Claims-based identity is this idea behind which instead of having to deal with the user at the infrastructure level, like the example that you defined, in which you have a website, and instead of having to force user to actually register and create a new account in your website, with claims-based identity, the idea is that you can, instead of trust, ask individual users to register, you can actually trust entire groups of users, because you trust the authority, what we call an identity provider, that manages those users. So rather than a website, let's think for a moment about a classic business situation. Let's say that you are a big company and you have a hardware vendor.
Right.
And let's say that you wanted to, like, this hardware vendor wants to give a special discount to your employees because you are such a good customer, and so it makes sense. So in order to decide that a specific user in that very moment, at their website, is entitled to a certain discount, we actually need to know the username and password of the user, or actually any details apart from the technicalities for, like, shipping, what they buy, and similar. What we need to know is that that user is an employee of your company, because they are in a business relationship with your company. And so claims-based identity allows you to project this business situation in the infrastructure layer. Let's say that if the website of a hardware vendor, it's configured so that every time somebody lands on the website is not authenticated, it redirects this user to the endpoint, which represents the authority that can actually authenticate the user, and upon successful authentication, award them with something, what we call indeed the claims,
okay. That
this user can then present to you and say, see, I was able to obtain this artifact, which is typically a security token, from that authority, and they prove that to you because that token is typically signed with a key which is associated with that authority.
Okay.
And then inside of this token, there will be what we call claims that are substantially attributes about the user, like, for example, this user is an employee of your company. And also, those are not just, how to say, factual attributes, but they come with the fact that they have been asserted by that authority.
Okay.
So the fact that that attribute lives inside a signed token, the token is signed from an authority, is what makes it a claim. Otherwise, it would just be an attribute. And the fact that it comes from a proof from where it's coming from allows you, as the website owner, to make a decision about if you want to trust that content or not.
I see.
And now, this is like the most generic idea, but the reality is that the infrastructure that you put together for implementing all these is very handy for many other reasons. Like, again, the example that I did before. I have one application. I have it in my own intranet. I want to host it in the cloud. In the cloud, my domain controller is not available unless I put a VPN. So I just needed to have a way of projecting my local accounts in applications that live outside. And you could use the same mechanism in which your users, when they go to that application, they first need to obtain a token from your local authority and then use it in there. So in this case, it's not really a matter of trust. It's more of a matter of this is a nice way of crossing boundaries, and this is an easy way of using my existing investment in my infrastructure to be used also outside.
Okay, yeah, so that's simpler, of course, than what you described earlier, calling into, say, a web service to determine whether or not this person is a valid user, or replicating that entire user database across two different systems, which can get out of date and very heavy.
Well, and here we have a tool, add a couple of gotchas. Let's say that there are situations in which you just want federation, because you just want to have that ability in which you trust the entire entity, and that's it. There are many other situations which we observed in which you want to be able, when you are managing this cloud application, to actually do operations that happen at the user level. So, for example, imagine that you have some kind of a document library, and you wanted to go for every document and say, for this document, I want these two users to be contributors, and one to be the author, and these other three to be just readers. Now, in order to do that, you need to have available the list of users. And perhaps you also need to know something about these users, like which groups they belong to and similar. If you're doing pure federation, then you actually don't know that, because all the information about the user live in your local directory, but your application is in the cloud. So what happens in both cases is that you might want to have a version of your directory in the cloud as well. And there are mechanisms so that, for example, you can have an automatic synchronization which keeps the two up to date. And of course, if you just want the list of the users, you don't go all the way to, for example, share the passwords. Like, you don't really export the password. You just export the list of users and the relevant
attributes. Sure, and all of the data that you care about in your system.
Right, and you keep instead the passwords back home so that you don't have a problem that you just described. And then at that point, you have the best of both worlds. And once you have that infrastructure in place, it's like having a big dial that you can move from. I have everything on-premise, or I have something on-premise and something in the cloud, or you can go all the way and have everything in the cloud. So let's say that you are not a huge shop, and you don't want to have a local Active Directory deployment, but you do need to keep track of your users.
Right.
If today you sign up for Office 365, one option that you have is to actually get a domain fully in the cloud, so that you can get on web pages, create users, add users to groups and similar. And now, the mechanism that we use for creating all those directories is actually backed by what we call Windows Azure Active Directory, which is a new platform as a service directory offering which lives in the cloud. And for the time being, the way in which you obtain it is by going through Office 365 or Intune. But moving forward, you're going to be able to get your directory even without having those services, just by being in Windows Azure. And the effect of that is that substantially you can have a directory that is completely in the cloud, or you can have a directory which is actually backed by your local directory, so that your users can authenticate with your local directory through Federation, go in your online apps. So we are getting to a richer world in which you can go from pure Federation and no sync to Federation and sync to instead nothing on-premise and everything in the cloud.
There's a lot of options.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so let me make sure I understand the Federation, or the claims-based authentication that you described earlier. There's a, my website is secured, but I'm not doing that. I don't know anything about my users, so I direct my users to some other authority, like a local Active Directory, and that issues a token.
Yep.
And that token contains claims about the user, claims being statements about his name is this, he belongs to these groups, or
that's correct.
He has blue eyes, or he's
exactly
he was born on this state. Whatever information that I request, it can be called that token, and that token is signed, so I trust that token because I know that it came from this authority that I trust.
Yep.
And then I use that token either first to authenticate, and then I can actually use that information internally if I wanted to, if only blue-eyed people are allowed to.
Right, that's exactly right.
Change the preferences based on maybe people from Italy have want to display that in Italian or something like that.
Yes, that's what they have.
And there's a product, actually, the Microtara framework that Microsoft offers to facilitate that, right?
Yes, there is a product of which I am a happy co-owner, which is the Windows Identity Foundation. And that's a set of classes that substantially can empower .NET applications to participate in all these ecosystems that we just described. So they would substantially give you the HTTP modules that can live in front of your website and enforce those protocols that we described whenever you receive a request. They contain classes that will take care of validating, deserializing tokens, and doing all the encryption and decryption mumbo-jumbo that you don't want to know about. And they will help you to manage sessions. Or if you are an authority owner and you have specific requirements that cannot be fulfilled by box products like DFS and similar, they also give you the building blocks for creating your own authority. And we released this product back in November 2009 as an out-of-band product. And a lot of other products took a dependence on it, most notably SharePoint. And since then, this thing was deemed so important, and so many other products took a dependence on it, but in the newest version of .NET Framework 4.5, the classes that before came as an out-of-band package are now actually part of a framework.
Oh, good. Okay.
So, for example, before you had to download this external assembly, and now instead the classes of that assembly are mostly in MS Core Lib. Or also, before, in order to integrate our claims-based identity in the existing system, we had to rely on deriving from the iPrinciple class, which is the class that the interface that every identity in .NET derives from. And then we had to do casting, we had to insert ourselves somehow. And instead, in .NET 4.5, every single principle in .NET derives from our claims principle class. So that you want it or that you don't want it, if you're using .NET 4.5, you are using claims-based identity.
So is it your expectation that people that are building applications starting with .NET 4.5 are going to be using claims-based authentication as opposed to just using the membership provider or some simpler mechanism? Simpler is maybe not the right word, but something they're used to.
No, I understand what you mean. So here the interesting thing is that, of course, every technology has its place, but just take the example of the membership provider. If you use the membership provider, at the end, you get something like a role principle. Uh-huh. That thing derives from claims principle. So all the roles that you obtain, for example, not from an STS, from an authority, but from a local membership.
STS
stands for Security Token Service, and that's then the name of the kind of service that you use for accepting token requests and issuing tokens. So it's like one tool that the authority uses for being an authority, basically. So what happens is that in .NET 4.5, once you end up having done your membership provider thing, and you are in the application, if you go and you take current principle dot, you'll have the claims collection, which contains, in form of claims, all the things that you got from the role provider and the profile manager.
Okay.
So everything looks like a claim, regardless of from where you picked it from.
Oh, okay, so that model at least is being internally used, even if you're using the same code that I'm used to.
Yes, like even if you use forms authentication, even if you use Kerberos, you get all those claims. In fact, in Windows 8, if you are in a Windows 8 domain and you authenticate using claims, the principle that you get, the Windows principle, will contain the general claims collection, which contains all the claims that you have, but we also have another specific collection called user claims, and the other one, which is device claims. And both groups are claims that are coming straight from Kerberos. Let's say that if in your schema, like you have in your local machine, some attributes that you add, like DNS name and similar, and for your users in Kerberos, if you add something in your schema, all those things will be projected in form of claims.
Interesting.
So that you can have, like, for example, let's say that you put a system that determines that a certain computer is healthy, and you do it at the Active Directory level. Now, when you use a claims-based authentication, when on the service side you receive a token from the user, that token will also contain information about the local machine, for example, and that information is certified at the Kerberos level. So it is an extremely high level of trust. So you can do things like authorization based on that. Like, I let you move these $25,000 only if your request is coming from a machine from my domain, which is healthy and similar. So we are starting to see all these things that claims-based identity enables, which were simply not possible before.
Right, it's more flexible. It used to be role membership was the key to authenticate the and authorization, but now it can be more than that. It can be any attribute about a user.
That is exactly right.
Very specific. So that's a lot of information, and it's a good starting point. Where can people find out more about this?
Well, you can just go on your favorite search engine and type Windows Identity Foundation, and if you are a hands-on person, or like a developer, I strongly suggest going for Identity Training Kit. And the first result is a link to a package which contains 5 to 7 hands-on labs which explore some of the surface that Windows Identity Foundation offers. And of course, it also helps you to use it with our cloud offering, which is pretty nice.
And some videos of you.
And it also contains some very boring video in which my heavily accented voice will lead you from the super basics, which is basically what we talked about today, to some more advanced usage.
Vittorio, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. technology has a lot of uses, but one of the best ones is to get a lot of friends.